Dennis Moynihan, and to our team in New York, Mike Burke, John Hamilton, Robbie Caron, Sharina Nadura, Nat Needham, and to our crew here in Brownsville, John Lance, Tom Fitzgerald, Dan Teachworth, Kirk Kendall, Claudia, and Maria Luisa. Democracy Now! Has job openings for full-time news producer. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. We broadcast from the Mexico-Texas border.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next is Positively Revolting.
KBOO Community Radio cordially invites you to the Women of KBOO Celebration and Open House on Friday, June 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. It's here at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Join us for the open house and an evening of on-air programming hosted by Barbara Bernstein and featuring Carol Major, Victoria Stafiello, and Maureen Key. We're celebrating the contribution of women volunteers, DJs, on-air hosts, staff, and board members in making KBOO what it is today. Light snacks and drinks will be provided. Everyone is welcome. Again, that's the Women of KBOO Celebration and Open House. It's on Friday, June 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. at KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Southeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm.
When I tell people I'm a volunteer, they say, well, that must be very hard. And I can't even explain to them how wonderful and the gifts that I have gotten from the people that I've met.
That was Jolene, a Lumina Hospice volunteer. Join us for Local Folks Podcast Episode 7 as she shares her experiences. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, list of programs, podcasts, web only, and click on Local Folks.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Oregon Zoo Summer Concerts, presenting the return of Bella Fleck and the Flecktones with the David Grisman Trio and the Jerry Douglas Band, Saturday, July 14th at the Oregon Zoo Amphitheater. Tickets and more information are available at zooconcerts.com.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
And good morning, good morning. It is about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani, and this morning I am very, very pleased that Dama has joined me in the studio, and we are here to talk about a couple of things, primarily this morning, focusing on the monumental election that is happening in Mexico over this weekend. On Sunday, over, I think it's 3,000 seats across the country, from municipal elections to federal offices to the presidency itself, are up for election, making this the largest election in Mexican history. And at this time that we are in the U.S. looking at immigration, looking at the policies that this country has drawn around immigrants and immigration, looking at what causes immigration, it seems like a really good idea to take a step back for a moment and look at what's happening politically in Mexico. And so we are doing just that this morning. Good morning, Dama.
Good morning, Annie. I'm so honored and so pleased to be here with you. And I'm so happy to be back with the cable listeners after a while. I'm on vacation from, you know, I'm a teacher for the Vancouver School District. So I'm so happy to be able to take a break and come back to my roots of activism and community organizing through the media.
And Dama is no stranger to KABU. She has participated in Donali and has been a guest multiple times on the air and also helping to govern the station a while back. You were on the board for a short time, and we always appreciate your participation. So thank you for making the time to be here this morning.
Well, thank you, Annie, and thank you to everyone for listening.
And so we got in touch this week because you contacted me about this election that is happening on Sunday. Let's just stop for a moment and actually look at what is happening. So Sunday is the largest election in Mexican history. And there are several candidates in the field for a presidency, which is what we're focusing on today. And the leader in the polls is López Obrador, best known by his initials, AMLO.
That's right.
So this is his third bid for presidency.
That's right.
Can you talk for a moment about AMLO and who he is?
Sure. And I'm no expert. I actually agreed to do this program because I knew I was going to be with Annie, and Annie, she actually is an expert on Mexican politics.
So and not.
You are an expert also in Mexican history, so there is not a better partner to do this program than you. I do have actual experience just from working with a lot of immigrant workers, understanding why they came here, understanding the issues we have in Mexico with the political system, with the electoral system, how also U.S., you know, policy has, in a way, directly and indirectly shape, you know, us and force us to migrate to the United States. But as you mentioned, this is a historical moment. We call Mexicans, we will call AMLO the fourth transformation of Mexico, and that's because there is three former presidents that has been really good presence in Mexico, and that happened long time ago. Probably we'll talk about them, but AMLO is someone very humble, someone that is like, I will compare it with Mujica, and he is a populist. He's a people's leader. He's someone that really wants to run for president, not because of the money or because of you know, the temptation that a lot of the presidents fall into, but because he really wants to see Mexico to progress. Especially he adores people in the countryside, and he knows there is this imbalance on the wealth and the power and all kinds of place where you look at. He really wants to invest in youth. He wants to give 30,000 scholarship to kids in Mexico so they can go to college. And there is a lot. He's someone very, very loving. I truly believe he is someone with very good values and principles. And his wife is also, you know, really, really amazing, you know, human being. Who, she's actually a journalist. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Mueller, she's a journalist. And so she has doctorate. She's someone very knowledgeable. And it's interesting that he has run for president two times already, and he has lost, and we'll talk about electoral fraud, but he actually now is working with a lot of intellectuals, which is very, very interesting. And we have a lot of intellectuals in Mexico who are also fed up with the neoliberalism and capitalism, where to the point where, like, yeah, let's support AMLO. They're coming out, you know, artists. There is this huge revolution going on of intellectuals coming to support, and writers, you know, coming to support AMLO. So
right. And so, as you were mentioning, this is his third bid for the presidency. And the first two have, there was a lot of concern, let's just say concern, about election fraud and how perhaps he's actually won the seat before,
right?
Legitimately, but
he did, yeah.
Corruption, through rigged elections, through election fraud. He, you know, so far has not actually been officially voted in. I remember, you know, so he was the mayor of Mexico City,
right?
Yeah, and has had a lot of to do with the teachers' unions, who again, and for folks that may not understand what the Normalistas or what the teachers' union
Sente.
You want to go ahead and explain what that is about? Because we hear, yeah, I think most, if any folks in the U.S., most folks in the U.S., if they've heard of Normalistas or the teachers' unions at all, know about the missing 43 students. And that's about, you know, that's about maybe what they've heard. And so you want to talk about how important the teachers' colleges are and sure. what that part of the story is.
Right. As a teacher myself, I will right. not talk about the right. teachers here in the United States and education. I think we're number 29 in the whole world, which is very sad. But I do work as an educator in one of the best districts of education, which is the Vancouver School District. But just to put in perspective, education in Mexico, we have a government for the last 90 years, whether it's pre or pan, who have not invested in education. We have a lot of communities in southern, I mean everywhere in Mexico, but I'll talk about Michoacán, that's where I was born. There's no schools in a lot of places. In Oaxaca, there's no schools. I've been there. In Guerrero, where the 43 college teacher students disappear, there is not many schools. It's very hard to get an education. And Ayotzinapa is one of the college universities where actually students go to learn to be teachers, and there is the government don't give them money, don't give any subsidies. Many of these kids, you have to understand, they have to go into what we call like a boarding schools. It's boarding places to live, meaning they have, many of them, they're away for, you know, 2-3 weeks, a month away from their families because they're so far away, and they have to rely on the government to receive, you know, food and lodging and all these first necessities. And they do raise awareness. I mean, this is teachers that want to make a difference, that teach kids to think, you know, to be critical thinkers. And that was one of the issues we have with the Ayotzinapa disappearance, which it was, the government locally of Guerrero did not want the students to continue. They had cut up by that time their food supplies. They have cut up funds for transportation. They were actually, at that time when the students disappeared on September 2014, they had no funds to buy food, to do not much when they were fundraising and, you know, the tragedy happened.
Right, yeah. right. And so, against this backdrop of really political repression of the people, the suppression of education, the deprioritization of funding for education, where, I know of a situation where a kindergarten teacher who's making maybe $5 a day.
That's right.
Has to buy all of her own supplies for right. her classroom, right?
Right.
And so you can see so against this backdrop, we have Obrador,
right?
Who comes forward and says, basically, this is enough,
right?
And people have gotten pretty excited about
right.
Supporting him. Now, he has actually formed his own, I don't know if he's formed it. You can perhaps fill me in a little bit there. But he's with a new party that has just formed called Morena.
Right. This is a new party. He's around 3 years old new, which is amazing. This is a huge transformation. in Mexico, because now we are reading that he will win, that this party, Morena, which is Movimiento Nacional de Regeneración, which it will be likely translated to Renovation, you know, National Party, and he actually, you know, got tired of all this corruption going on, you know, PRD when he lost, and he did not get much support at that time, and he moved on to create after the 2012 elections. And there was, you have to understand, at that time there was a lot of killing. There's still a lot of killing, you know, orchestrated by the government. We know there's a lot of killing for journalists who are trying to pretty much just cover stories, and he knew that he needed to create something, that it had to be something from scratch. If one of his main ideals is to get rid of corruption, which is something really hard, almost impossible, but I have faith that, you know, maybe he can do it. But he understood that you have to burn down the house. This is something that is a concept that a lot of Americans don't understand, because not to, you know, not to pick sides or not to be picking on anybody, but I hear this a lot. Who are you going to vote for, Republican or the Democratic Party? And and I want to go outside the box and say none, because we have a saying in Mexico, you know, this is as bad as the other one. It's just indifference of how they accomplish, you know, things. But he actually went and created a different party. And we do have, I mean, unfortunately, some of former priistas and panistas from the main political parties actually switching into Morena, the new party. So you wonder, like, how much corruption and how, you know, what kind of values they're bringing. But at least there is this, the new grassroots, new, you know, basic principles of Morena, which is being honest, not to steal and not to betray your country. And we'll talk more about betrayal, like, you know, with President Peña Nieto, which is the current president, you know, welcoming Donald Trump before Donald Trump won the election into Los Pinos, which is like the White House, and all this controversy that then, you know, Trump came back to the United States and saying, yeah, Mexico's paying for the wall.
Right. But you were, let's just go ahead and amplify that a little bit, how dangerous it is for journalists in Mexico. Mexico is the third most dangerous country for journalists after Iraq and Syria. I do believe are number one and number two. Veracruz is the state where, in fact, a couple years ago, more journalists were killed than anywhere else on the planet. You know, and so, and against that backdrop, political assassination has been, you know, is common too strong a word before, you know, this election. And I see on Democracy Now that two more political candidates were assassinated this week, at two mayoral candidates. And by and large, from my understanding, it is the mayoral candidates that seem to be being picked off if they are standing against corruption and trying to find this new path.
Right.
And so it's against this backdrop, right, that this election is taking place. And so because of the past fraud, because of the violence that is happening in relation to this election, there's a group of international observers that have come forth from all over the world. Can you talk about the international observers that are coming together?
Right. Well, there is 42 international observers coming from all over the world. I know that some of them could not get to Mexico because they traveled through U.S., and they are part of the Muslim ban. So we have to also sue Mr. Trump for not letting our international
observers. With international observers. You know.
We have Americans, you know, from here, from this country. I know one of them is from ASME Union in Puerto Rico, Jose Luz. We have also several legislators that are actually taking the time from office in their own countries, like Portugal, Peru, you know, El Salvador, the FMLN is sending also observers. It's around 23 countries that are participating in this neutral, nonpartisan international observation. And this is so key. And I think it's fascinating. That's why I'm here, is because I think Americans, I don't know how to call, you know, English speakers here in the United States, American citizens need to, you know and understand how corruption works, how electoral fraud. We know that there is this, you know, huge, massive killings in so many different places of the country that is orchestrated by the government, by the narco gobiernos, by the government working with the organized crime. But how does it work in election day, right? So that's why we have the international observers to see how the intimidation happens, even in the electoral office when you are voting, and also to prevent fraud. We know that there is several organizations that have participated in the past as international observers. There is, you know, Global Exchange and many others that I can name. But because of the increase of violence, especially with Felipe Calderon and all this violence going on, which it was no longer safe for international observers in the last election, which was 2012. And many of these human rights organizations chose to work with the victims of, for example, you know, the Ayotzinapa, and before that, Acteal, you're very familiar with that. Mm-hmm. So switching their focus, their energy into more like a human rights, and they did not send a lot of, you know, or none of international observers in the last election, which was also, you know, there was electoral fraud. So finally, this year, 2018, we are seeing at least, you know, 42 international observers. Is not enough, but we wish we can have more. If there is more Americans that are still planning to go to Mexico, it is now too late to register as an official international observer, but it's still, you can go to the communities where we know there is a lot of intimidation and see how this process happened, because there is a lot of intimidation. There is a lot of electoral fraud, not only buying.
I was going to say, there's a lot of bribery.
There is a lot of bribery that is legal.
Yeah.
It is legal. I mean, it wouldn't be legal in places like here in the United States, but over there, there's a lot of bribery. There's a lot of, we call it dispensas, food bags, and yeah, a lot of, you know, bank cards that I know the main government are issuing. You know, and then
this is actually
open.
A story that I am fairly familiar with. I had talked to folks who, it's secondhand knowledge on my account for sure, but that they were given bank cards if they voted for a specific mayor. You got a bank card, and you could go to a store, and it was sort of a gift card to specific stores. And when people went to use them, there was actually nothing on them.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's just like, okay, there's like so much wrong with that. I just don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
It's like corruption meets corruption meets some, I don't even know what. It's farcical. It really is. And yet this is the political reality, you know, that the country next to us is facing. And frankly, that level of corruption, I can see pretty quickly, you know, catching on here as well. Whether there's laws against it or not, we know that we've had at least one stolen national election, at least. We know that we've had major election fraud. And so I think it does us good to learn each other's stories and to, again, act in international solidarity to make the whole world a better place. And that's
right.
That's my interest in actually talking about this election. This morning here on KABU, you are listening to KABU. We're your community radio station, and we're inviting your questions, your comments, your phone calls here to the studio at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. I'm Ani. I'm here with Dama, and we are talking about the election in Mexico, just a landmark election this weekend. And the presidential candidate, AMLO, López Obrador, who is looking like he's got about a 20 or 30 point lead in any poll in this, his third term, his third bid for a presidential election. Again, that number is 503-231-8187. You can call in, and you can also, I want to encourage you to follow along throughout the week on Facebook. You can find our page and like us. We are Positively Revolting on Facebook. And in Twitter, we are at Positive Revolt. So please do follow us in social media and help to keep everyone informed all week long. So at this point, what do you hope? So there's international observer training. There's the election on Sunday. What are you hoping to see, Dama?
Well, before that, I actually wanted to comment on the teachers' union. Yeah. I know personally there is this emphasis on the, just to compare, right? Washington wanting to, you know, make better teachers, and they're actually putting some money, finally, with the McGillery decision. And actually, my union is right now in the middle of negotiations. And this is in Vancouver. So I think I'm happy that the fact that there is some money so they can give more training to teachers. Now, comparing that to Mexico, it is just outrageous, you know, what the government, you know, it started with Calderon and then with Peña Nieto wanting to do this, you know, like, you know, a crazy evaluation on teachers, but it was more with the intention not to create quality teachers, but it was actually to, you know, cut their head off if you don't, you know, go along with the government. If you don't pledge to the government, you know, we will cut off your head. And
kind of literally is the thing. Yeah.
Right. I don't think my mom and my sister can hear me. They are actually, they work for the University of Michoacán, and they're actually, they just had a new, you know, it's like a board, and there are thousands of them, and they are actually, I heard that they're actually voting for Obrador and AMLO, and all I can say is that Obrador understands the need for more teachers, the need for quality teachers, the need, but you cannot expect all of this when you are defunding and killing and disappearing, especially with the case of Ayotzinapa, where 43 of them were, you know, killed, they disappear, and till this day, the parents of these 43 students are looking for their beloved ones, and they are not to be found. Actually, the government came out with this sophisticated theory of the Kukula garbage can, where they were, but that's another story for a different program. But I just wanted to emphasize that, you know, how important it is for the CENTE actually now working with Obrador, and Obrador understanding, to me, education is the basis for everything. That's why, you know, I chose to be a low-income teacher and receive little money, but to be working, you know, I've been working for the Vancouver School District for 11 years at least, since 2017, and it's so important. I personally, you know, hope, you know, that if AMLO, it is the candidate that the people are asking, they're claiming, is very clear in the polls that he is the one in advantage. I personally will not vote for any of the ones that are now. I think he does present a good chance to transform Mexico. I think he's honest. We have, from what I've seen and what I read, he has not shown any signs of corruption when he was, as you mentioned, the mayor of Mexico City. He did actually accomplish a lot of several things. So he has proven to be working, and I'm really excited that the fact that he's opening to women and to young people to be part of his gabinete, you know, his working system, you know, once elected. So I hope that can not only take place in Mexico, but he has promised us, which is my passion, working with immigrant rights, human rights. He has promised to work with the Mexican consulate to turn them into DA's district attorney's office, to turn it into defend the immigrant rights, human rights, which is so needed in this country now that we have these, you know, hater precedent, you know, dividing our communities, but also separating now actually parents from children and doing all this crazy stuff. So
yeah. Let me remind folks that coming up at 9 o'clock, perhaps it's not even a reminder, let me inform you, coming up today at 9 o'clock, we are hoping to be live from the Occupy ICE PDX protest in Southwest Portland. That's in the South Waterfront area, in over on McAdam and Bancroft, outside of the ICE headquarters in Portland. And so that's at 9 o'clock. We will be going live from there with Jenka and Teresa Mitchell. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views will be on, presenting 11 things that white progressives do that I really hate. And at 10:15, Flashpoints will be on the air with Dennis Bernstein. 11 o'clock, Between the Covers. And we want to thank you, KABU members, for your generous support, because that makes it all happen. We are listener-supported radio. We are volunteer-driven community radio. And we do this with, by, and for the community. So please do continue your generous support of KABU. If you are not a KABU member right now, please take care of that. Go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. And you can, in fact, support community radio this morning. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can do that right now. Get in early and not all rush at the end of the show when we're out of time. So 503-231-8187. You had mentioned in passing earlier, there's so much that has been mentioned in passing. Let's go ahead and explore a couple of those topics. You had mentioned wanting to talk a little bit further about Peña Nieto, the current president, who is one of the very few people I can point to, very few national leaders around the world, that has a lower, consistently lower approval rating than Trump.
I just read today something about Trump. He actually dropped to number 40 out of 45 as the worst president in the United States. So, but I think Peña Nieto, I mean, I think Trump, at least he's kind of some kind of smart. He's a hater. I mean, I don't know
that he's any kind of smart.
Maybe not, huh? But Peña Nieto definitely.
He's, not so much.
No. No, you know, I think I will just name really quick some of the reasons why his popularity has increased. I mean, as soon as he started, you know, he was in the presidency when, you know, the students disappeared. He never pronounced any president here in the United States, you know, when something happened, an atrocity happened, like the disappearance of 43 students, right? Any president will make any, you know, here in the United States, you know, well, in Mexico, it took months for him to even recognizing that it was an issue. Mm-hmm. His government blocked a lot of the investigations. We actually had to have international scientists and, how do you call it, forensic experts. Mm-hmm. Some of them from Argentina who actually came to resolve and do the job for the government because they were covering up the organized crime that it was so pervasive, working hand in hand with the local, you know, government, right, from his party into the, you know, we're going to call it Guerrero, what's the name? Ayotzinapa. And well, the name will come back, but you know, the city, they denied that it was a fundraising going on for right, the wife of the mayor, and they didn't want it, any disturbance, and they thought the students were going to be, you know, protesting her event, so they sent, you know, the local police and the narcos to stop these kids. Well, that was one of the first things that brought down to Peña Nieto's president popularity. Then you have the Casablanca, the White House, which is, you know, he's married to a soap opera. I wouldn't say the soap opera queen, because we have really good soap operas. That's why we don't have that much, you know, in general. Let me just generalize, you know, as people, you know, it's hard to create this consciousness of critical thinkers when we are the number one country of soap opera in the world.
The telenovela,
The drama. We love the drama. And that's a catharsis for a lot of women. I will not generalize, but they love the soap opera. I mean, our life, you know, is so, sometimes it's so messed up that we need to cry.
You get to externalize your drama and see it on the screen.
So his wife wife come up and she says, well, I have this $17 million, you know, house that I have in U.S. and I bought it just by working, doing soap operas. And other soap operas, you know, actresses, they come up protesting and say, hello, wait a minute, you know, I'm better than you and I never ever made not even $1 million, you know, just working as a soap opera queen. And there was all these connections with all these subcontracting, you know, companies, businesses that have been working for their government, and then Videgaray, the other also, you know, getting the another kind of like a White House, the popularity goes down like 30 to 36 points. Then we have El Chapo Guzman escaping from from the, you know, the high, you know, I don't know how to call high intensity, high security prison. Yeah. Then the Popeye goes to 28. And then, you know, he continues going on with all this.
He's also privatized the oil industry.
That's
right?
What he brought into 16 points and los gasolinazos. And now with the privatization of the water. You
right,
know.
And this is something I didn't know, but earlier this month, the water has been privatized in Mexico.
That's right.
And it just, you know, makes me want to, I don't even know what it makes me want to do. So that's why I do talk radio and try to make the world a better place working together. Because once we start privatizing water systems, my God, right? You know, and Mexico is not the first country to do that.
Right.
But the fact that it has just happened, and again, under Peña Nieto's watch, his popularity, I understand, is about 12% right now.
That's right.
Yeah, 503-231-8187, the number to call to join us this morning in this conversation around Mexican election and the politics and political realities of Mexico today. Camilo is on hold. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Camilo. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm unfortunately having a senior moment, and the whole point of what I want to say to Damaris is something that I've forgotten. I was at the party given by Peter Parks for the former director of VOS, whose name I'm not able to remember now.
Sosa?
I'm sorry?
Are you talking about Pedro Sosa or Romero Sosa?
Romero. Yes. And I wanted to approach Damaris to tell her just how much I appreciated what she had to say and how eloquent and poetic she was and how moving her compliments and her appraisal of the situation was. And I didn't get a chance. And now I have the chance. I just wanted to say that to her.
Oh, Camilo, thank you. Kisses, besos. Thank you. That's very nice. That's very kind. I was very, you know, very happy to be, very honored to be at the Romeo Sosa's. It was kind of like an honoring party we had at Peter Parks' house, which, you know, I was there to play music, but also I was there to protest. I want Romeo Sosa to be back into, that's another story, into the day laborers, you know, why he got fired. He shouldn't get hired. We don't fire our workers, you know, we train our workers, we give them resources. But anyway, thank you, Camilo. I really appreciate your call. And you are actually the first one that pronounced my name in the perfect way. That's my name. Damaris. You know, I actually cut up my name, you know, make it, I also privatized, shortened, you know, my name so to make it easier for Americans. So two syllables, Dama, but yeah, it is Damaris. Thank you, Camilo. Kisses.
De nada.
Gracias.
Adios.
All right. Thank you very much, Camilo. 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning to join us. So you have been an activist and very active in Portland for many years now. And if we could just jump a little bit from the political milieu in Mexico to the community in this area, that, you know, outside of Portland, just the whole region. Can you talk a little bit about the feeling here at this point in terms of there's so much in terms of this election and people paying attention to it, but also in terms of what's happening right now with ICE and immigration?
Well, I have this kind of like, how can I say? I don't want to give myself credit, but I have this popularity among some Latinos.
Because you're kind of incredible.
of actually taking people from the class, from immigration and the police. And, you know, I just happen to be, you know, the number one person to, you know, I've gotten calls from people like when it happened with Francisco Aguirre. Mm-hmm. Was very, very well-known case, and I happened to be the first one that got a call. Actually, it was from Romeo Sosa telling me that ICE was bullying him, and there were actually several entities of the government outside of his house, and I happened to go there, and I actually negotiated with them, tried to paint a picture of why they should leave him alone and not to be bringing, you know, SWAT teams, riot teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was like the police, there was so much going on at the Francisco Aguirre house at that time, surrounding the neighborhood. And I could imagine the picture of his kids, you know, through this glass door, you know, just being terrorized. And absolutely. I know from personal experience how that feels from my kids. I was just very, you know, quick to act, and then the community showed up. So I was the first one to talk to ICE and say, you know, you have no business to be here. He has a case, he has file, there's lawyers involved, you know, you need to leave because the community is coming, and you need to understand what's actually the terror that you will cause in the community if the media gets here, if the word gets out that you're here. You know, people start freaking out, they stop sending their kids to school, they start sending, you know, their kids to, you know, daycares, parents don't go to work, people stop using the bus system, it's really bad for the economy, they don't go to stores, especially, you know, like, so anyway, so there is this, all this, you know, terror and intimidation when immigration, when ICE is out there. And I also have another friend, I will not say her name, when I also got the call, and instead of going to work, I just went straight to her house to help her. And I was talking to her before I got there, so the police knew I was coming, and they knew I was going to call the media, and they just took off, they disappeared. So when I got there, you know, I just found this big place, it was a big messy house, because, you know, police was trying to find something that they couldn't find, because there was nothing there, but it was just these phony things, phony suspicions activity, these phony charges. It happened with the father of my kids. I remember another case where it was with Manny Perez, I think that was his name, with it was actually a parent of my daughter's friend at the regular middle school where the brother has been taken, and he should not be with ICE because he was a DACista, DACA recipient, but he was taken, and I was like, you know what, we're going to fight this off. And this is all kind of independently, right? So right. That's why I guess I have the reputation, not because I don't want to work as a team, and it's not because I don't want to work with there's so many organizations working on these, like, you know, like CAUSA and BOS and, you know, PECUN, I'm sorry if I forget some of the names, the Americans, you know, very good, effective organization. Mm-hmm. It's just because of the sense of urgency clicks in my brain, and we have to do something. I'm not waiting for anybody. So we were able to get Manny Perez out of the detention center in Macadam, actually, at that time. And it was just because I told the sister, let's go visit him. I'm going to bring my music, my guitar, and then we're going to tell them that we want to visit him. And then if they say no, we'll bring more people to visit. We only wanted to visit him. But we were bringing so many people.
And so much attention.
So much attention that then they released him in that moment. We were like, yeah, they said, well, they came back and they said, how many of you guys are coming? And I said, I don't know, maybe 8, 10, 20, 30. I honestly did not know. I wasn't bluffing. I was like, I don't know how many people, but, you know, we want to see right. him. So they went into their talking. You know, 30 minutes later, they say, we're going to release him. We were like, yay, victory. We were not planning on, you know, having this huge victory, but thank you to the people that showed up at the time. I remember Paul Rick was there with me, and also what's the name of this Ecuadorian, I'm sorry, friend of Romeo Sosa was there, I forgot his name, Anyway, so Pedro Sosa was there too. And so we got this person out of the McAdam building because there was a school next door or daycare something, center. And they didn't want it, you know, to make any. The family was amazingly happy. And that's, I guess that's to me the most important things. And it's not that easy. I fought battles against, I even went to trial, you know, with me and my family against the Beaverton police. I've taken, you know, I won battles, you know, I actually won my own battle with ICE, you know, in the court. And I thank the St. Andrew's Church, Jack with Justice, you know, Friends, American Friends Service Committee, all these people always showing up. And we won my husband, you know, the father of my kids, you know, legal residency. So there is all these things going on that now that I see Occupy, I'm like, God bless you. Thank you so much. Because when we were getting people out of ICE, the McAdam Detention Center, it was so few of us. It was 5, 10, 20, 30. But now it's growing into a movement. And I'm thinking like now, yeah, American citizens, they figured out how to, you know, start melting these racial profile systems, how this structural fascism and racism is in this country. But if you want to do something, work around, don't move to Canada or Mexico. Actually, stay here and fight and start fighting ICE, you know, immigration. You know, I love the poster in your office, which it says, our fire will melt the ice.
We
and
are
I
the
think
fire that will melt the ice. Yeah.
And I think that's such a beautiful, you know, visual of the element, you know, how we can fight these giant, you know, haters.
Right. And that was created by people in the encampment and given to me by another volunteer yesterday, or at least loaned to me to put on my door for a while yesterday. So I want to go ahead and actually look at the sort of prevailing, the changes that you're talking about right now with, so I've been doing programs about immigration, about making, you know, building bridges to our neighbors who may be here immigrated from Mexico or Central America, and try, you know, for years on this show. And for many years, I kept feeling like I am this voice shouting in the wilderness, right? That we would get calls from native English speakers from the U.S. who are like, what gives? You know, talking about how, you know, immigration overall, we've had enough of it. We need this. We need, you know, we don't. And it's been hard, right? But now it's like the atrocities of the blatant atrocities of this administration have gone so far as to actually, it seems to pierce the conscience of other folks. So now, in the past, things have happened that have been horrible. Yeah. I mean, Obama has been the most, the president that deported the most people up till now, right? And it was hard to gain any traction because he was so popular.
Yeah.
But now it seems like people are actually listening and waking up and forming these massive protests. And I want to get back to that train of thought in just a moment. But we have this that has developed. Eduardo is on the line right now, and he's in Mexico City working with the National Observers. Eduardo, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you, everybody?
Eduardo, I'm so happy you're calling. Thank you.
No, well, I'm super happy that you're there, Damaris. And I just let you know, guys, that I'm here in the Mexico City volunteering with this international observers effort. And it's amazing, the energy here in the city. Actually, I think it's going to be a historical participation of the people in the elections, but at the same time we have a very very bad tradition of election fraud in Mexico. So the international observers is something that can prevent that happen again in our country. So I'm really happy. I want to thank you, Damaris, and thank all the people in the cable to give us the opportunity to open this communication and tell the people, hey, please, put your eyes on Mexico. Mexico is an important partner with the United States, but also we have a lot of people actually in Oregon, Oregon resident now, but traveling to Mexico to participate in this, in my country, in this effort. So thank you very much, everybody. We saw about 110,000 people attending one of these end of the campaigns, and it's amazing how the people is participating, talking, and also taking care of the ballots places. So please keep your eyes on Mexico, and thank you very much for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you very much for taking the time to call us and just giving us a little more information about what's happening currently right now in Mexico City. Thank you, Eduardo.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Eduardo Corona is our regional coordinator with Morena in the exterior. It means that, he's the one that he's been working on coordinating, forums, assemblies, working with the Northwest, with Seattle committees of Morena, L.A., all this area, huge area of Oregon, and also now working in Vancouver. And he went to Mexico to not only participate as a local observer, but also he's now helping to coordinate international observers in Mexico City, and helping as an interpreter, which is something very needed in this time. So
absolutely.
My presence here is a volunteer. I'm a citizen and many other people. So actually, I just want ask to my people to come and vote and take care of the elections and take care of what's happened after. Asking the people to share all the information that they have over the internet, which is a great media to broadcast what's happening now. But my efforts here is as a regular citizen only.
All right. Thank you so much, Eduardo.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you for letting me get in, and have a beautiful day.
And to you.
Gracias.
And let's just also fast forward for a moment off of Eduardo's call to say, if you are interested in this subject, as well you should be, I'm just going to put it out there, as well you should be, to actually pay attention to what is happening in right. global politics. DeMaurice will be back on Sunday, on election day, here on KABU at noon. Actually substituting as a host for Mujeres Bravas, a very long-running show here on KABU. And we're very happy that Dama has agreed to come on and be a part of Mujeres Bravas this Sunday, so you can keep us updated as that day goes on. Mexico City is 2 hours ahead of Portland time. And so it'll be a little too early for election results, but
right.
certainly you can keep folks updated as to the issues of the day, as well as anything that has occurred at that point on Sunday.
And we promise to make it bilingual. We promise to speak both languages. And just any questions, just in general, if you have any questions about the upcoming election, I will keep in touch with Annie. And Annie's actually, she's like a historian of Mexican history. And
for the last 20 years.
You're like a political, you're like a political scientist. It's amazing how much you know. And I was joking with her. I told her, I actually know more about U.S. history than my own history, because, they call it alien resident. They call an alien mm-hmm. resident. So we're once you start the process of citizenship, you become alien. You're still an alien, but we're residents, and you have to learn these 100 questions about U.S. history. They expect you to memorize it, and then they test you on it. And if you did not memorize it, you have no idea what are going to be the random questions, and you fail the test.
I'm really glad you brought up the whole naturalization process. It's something that I'm a little familiar with in two countries, in the U.S. and in Mexico. And it's just because of my own bizarre family history. I was adopted out of my birth family as an infant, and raised by family who my adopted mother's side was from England. They were immigrants, and she was naturalized when I was a toddler.
Oh, wow.
And so I heard all about how hard it was to become an American citizen,
right.
How you had to study very, very hard, how she knew more American history than any of my friends,
right.
Or any of my friends' parents, because she had to memorize it. So flash forward, right, to my adult life, when I've become very close with my biological mother, who immigrated to Mexico,
right,
and who became a Mexican citizen,
uh-huh.
Some years ago. And who had to study Mexican history.
Right.
And had to, again, know Mexican history better than folks who were born in the country because
right.
of the same process in both sides. And I just think that's a little bit fascinating, right? When you are attempting to become a naturalized citizen of a different country, how dedicated you have to be.
Yeah.
And how many hoops there are to jump through.
Yes.
And I bring this up only because there's a refrain from folks that don't know better.
Right.
That, you know, these immigrants, you know, if they really want to stay in this country, they should become citizens. Not
yeah.
understanding the incredible
that is almost impossible.
And the incredible expense. I
yeah.
mean, it is not a cheap thing to do.
No.
And it is at so many high bars.
Yeah.
To jump.
And I will just mention a couple things. One, there is a man that I really love. He passed away as in your language, not your, but, you know, Mr. Trump, as an illegal immigrant. And he's actually came, and I will say his name. His name is Don Severo. I wrote a song about him. He was a member of PECUN when I had the honor to work organized with the Farm Workers Union here locally. He came with the Bracero program when they needed,
well, yeah.
you know, use only the hands of the Mexican, you know, laborers and bring them to United States. And he came legally four times as a farm worker, and he was never given the opportunity to adjust his immigration status. He lost his eyes, his, you know, mm. his lungs, you know, of course, being exposed to pesticides.
Yeah.
He had, I don't know how many grandkids and kids he had, but he had at least, I don't know, 20, 30 grandkids and then great-great-grandkids in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, he was actually one of the few who could not adjust his immigration status because there was never a way. And I think that's part of the white privilege is that they think that a path to citizenship is easy. Well, it's not.
No.
If you're not married to a U.S. citizen, you cannot. And there is, you know, some U visas, right, which thank God they exist because
mm-hmm.
there is so much violence against women or even violence against men, you know, that helps that. But it's almost impossible for people. If I want to adjust, I'm a U.S. citizen, but if I want to adjust my mother's, you know, status for her to come here to live with me, it will be so much needed because I have a couple kids I need to babysit all the time, right? It will take, like, I don't know, at least 16 years for me to adjust her immigration status,
right.
even though me and myself as a U.S. citizen. At least I have a pathway, but what about
right.
the millions of immigrants have been working here for 10, 20, 30, 40 years paying taxes, having kids, having family, you know, rooted here in, you know, honest, hardworking taxpaying immigrants that don't have the path to citizenship, and they won't be able to maybe ever touch us immigration
right.
status.
Well, we are really just about out of time. We have a couple minutes left, and I want to spend those couple of minutes, again, just looking at the sea change in attitude that that Damaris and I were talking about right before we went on the air, how at this moment it seems like there is a sea change, that the American conscience has been pierced, and that we are recognizing many, many people across this nation are recognizing how much of a travesty, how inhumane ICE is and has been. 600 women were arrested in a mass civil disobedience yesterday. And people are now calling for the abolishment of ICE. And I find that to be really encouraging.
I think it's very encouraging. I think if we want to really bring this country together, unify, I'm a nonviolent person and also work really hard to be a nonviolent communicator. I'm a teacher myself. I teach my kids all this. I have to recognize Barack Obama, president, was actually the one that tried to deport the father of my kids.
Yeah.
He did some of the worst deportations that we can think of. Like you said, but people did not see how bad the policy of deportation was and how much it was destroying families. I will just mention one thing, and I will say goodbye with that. If I saw my daughter, her name is Maya, cry every night. She was 3. And she will go to bed and cry every night because she missed her father. And she will not go to sleep until she run out of tears, being so tired. So just think about the thousands and millions of kids that have to go through this. I thought if Barack Obama, it's not going to be separated from his family and his daughters. Why should my kid or any kid be separated from their parents?
A fine question. It just shouldn't happen. And with that, we are out of time. The next thing up will be remote from the ICE encampment on McAdam and Bancroft with Jenka and Teresa Mitchell. So stay tuned. You'll want to stay tuned to KBOO all day long, all weekend long. We got so much more coming up. And we'll be back next week. Thanks so much for being there.
Gracias.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock, and coming up next, KBOO will present a live report from the Occupy ICE PDX protest in Southwest Portland.